This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Jeff Sandhu
and Arvind Yuvaraj.
And we've also got Christine Wong sat in the studio with us right now. She's sat there quiet in the corner for a change. That's a joke, Christine. I love it. We've also got Vanessa here in the studio as well, our intern who is saying goodbye to us today. Sadly, he isn't right. How long have you been here now, Vanessa? How long? Quickly jump on that microphone.
Hi, I've been here for 3 months.
Uh-huh.
Has it been good? Like, has BFM been a really good learning experience for you?
Jeff is pinching me right now, and it's been great.
Right.
Cut the mic, Rich. Cut the mic.
Cut the mic, yeah. Stories we have lined up for you today. We've got stories about another Bitcoin fork, which I'll be talking to you about very briefly.
Someone's going to make a lot of money.
Well, we hope so, right? We hope so. Fingers crossed. Mm. Astro have allegedly...
Someone's going to lose a lot of money.
They've allegedly got a competitor coming on board.
Yeah.
Anyway, also how Spotify and a whole bunch of other tech companies are starting to drop some music posted by the alt-right, and how you can excel in Excel.
Oh, I love this story. I love it.
And Arvin will be telling us about some Michelin star...
Super noodles.
Mm. He's going to make one for us
while he talks
about this Michelin star noodles.
Is that what he's doing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you do it,
Chef Arvin?
Can you do it in the style of a Swedish chef?
Oh, yes.
Almost got it.
Fun Friday indeed.
Hang on. So, right, what we want to start off with then is this Bitcoin story. So, they are forking again, right?
Yeah.
So, in November, there will be three versions of the world's most popular cryptocurrency. So, just a few years ago, it seemed like Bitcoin was a bit of a singular force, which in retrospect is quite naive since it's an open source tech managed by a bunch of infighting nerds.
Yes.
But after a long debate, there was a whole bunch of people who said Bitcoin isn't quite doing the things that we want it to do. It's not quick enough. It's not private enough and one thing or another. So they coalesced around this idea, a solution called segregated witness, right?
Mm.
Which basically will change how data is stored in blocks to free up some of the space when it kicks in later in August. As we know, it's just kicked in just over the last few days. But the size of the blocks themselves will stay at 1 megabyte on the original blockchain, right? So what's happened is some people are now not happy with this segregated witness thing, and they are saying the size of the block is too big. 8 megabytes, they are saying, is too big. So just to put things and to be crystal clear, here's what the main differences are. Bitcoin will have a 1 megabyte block and will have a segregated witness. Bitcoin Cash, which is the first fork, will have an 8 megabyte block with no segregated witness. And the third fork, which will be SegWit2, and the New York agreement, will have 2 megabyte blocks and segregated witness.
So everything's just going to be completely different. So now when you talk about Bitcoin, there's just so many variants of Bitcoins that we have. And now we already have two.
Right. And if you already own some Bitcoin,
yes,
come November, you will have the equivalent in three. So you will have three times the amount, but you will have, let's say it's one Bitcoin. You'll have one Bitcoin, one Bitcoin Cash, and one SegWit2 version of Bitcoin.
Huh.
So it basically means that the industry is going to get really interesting. The ecosystem of that industry hasn't quite decided where they want to go. And the problem is, you know, we are looking at the prices of Bitcoin. I think as of today, it was something like 19,000
ringgit, yeah.
Right?
More or less around there.
Right.
Yeah.
And we predicted, or it was predicted rather, that the price would have dropped after the fork.
Yeah. Didn't quite happen, did it?
No one knows.
The
question is, what's going to happen next with this next fork?
So no one knows.
Without giving, you know, advice or anything, you know, personally, I think I would buy Bitcoin right now, or rather at the next dip.
If I had another kidney to sell, I would probably. Yeah,
the one that's left. Right?
The one that's left, because the previous one was already done for Ethereum, right? So I have one. Could you find a story where a human body could run without both kidneys? Then I would go for a Bitcoin.
Why don't you come in next week on Tuesday? We have a story actually regarding that.
The ones that were printed with those 3D printers.
Yes, correct.
Good enough. I lug around like a packet that, you know, that's connected to my liver.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you have a few bitcoins, so it's okay.
Oh, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, so what does this mean? So if, like, let's say someone, it's like the equivalent of if someone has $5,
yeah,
now they will have 15.
No, they will have $5, but they will have $5 in different currencies.
Yeah.
$5 in different currencies. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So it depends on what you want to use it for, and depends on which sort of think of it as like a junction.
Mm-hmm.
You have the value in terms of, you know, 5 bitcoins,
mm-hmm,
and then in front of you is a road that splits into 3 different roads. So if you decide to take road A, then you're stuck with that road A, and then if you have to go back, you're going to lose some of your cash because you already set on that journey. So the forking has happened because of, you know, the community between Bitcoin users and, you know, platforms that own Bitcoins. They feel that they want Bitcoin to go in a certain direction, but the community feels like, no, it should go in a different direction. That's why, you know, operators like Coinbase are, you know, in a lot of trouble because they've decided to take on a different path, but the users were felt like that was not your promise, and there's a lot of confusion going on, and it's all being, there's no monetary power in this.
Yeah,
everyone owns it, so everyone has the same amount of say in what they want to do with this technology, and that's why you have a lot of this, you know, it's splitting up, it's forking into different areas.
However, you know, one of the things that is important to kind of bear in mind is that you know, Bitcoin and some of the things that people want to happen with it, Litecoin pretty much does the same as Bitcoin Cash does, you know, and whatever, but it has a different name. The reason that they're sticking with the name Bitcoin and tagging on little bits and pieces is because it has the name Bitcoin and it has intrinsic value because
to the
of
name.
That.
Yeah. So it's all going to be Bitcoin, but it's all going to be in different roads.
Yeah, it's
Bitcoin 1, Bitcoin 2,
exactly,
Bitcoin 3.
Exactly. Mm. It's super confusing, and a lot of people are going to get really frustrated and not know what to do with the cryptocurrency that they have or how they can use it. And even if people start accepting this new version of this currency, we'll see. It's a bright, shiny future. Speaking about that, a bright, shiny future regarding broadcasting here in Malaysia.
Yeah, Astro, after nearly 2 decades of, you know, them being a monopoly in terms of your satellite TV, pay TV provider, they will now face competition. This is according to sources from The Star. They reported that a new cable TV operator called ANSA Broadcast is in the midst of kickstarting a new satellite TV pay TV service here in Malaysia. The company, ANSA Broadcast, is previously known as U Television.
Mm-hmm.
It's a subsidiary of the Berjaya Group. ANSA's broadcast emergence will put Astro, who've been, they've been having a very nice run over the last two,
say
what,
it what
20
it is,
years.
They've had a monopoly on
they
it.
They had a monopoly over it, right? And they've been, you know, chilling out and relaxing and go like, yeah, you know, we have that dominance. But now it's when, you know, you would see how Astro would be able to, you know, compete and, you know, have this open market feel, right? So if it materializes, this will be a new challenge here in Malaysia, because we've just always, we had Mega TV for a long while,
before,
right?
Astro.
Before Astro, yeah, right? Yeah. And we all know how that just kind of died down later.
That's because
on.
People in like Petaling Street were like making the boxes and selling them for like $50 or something. And
really?
You could buy like the fake boxes, then it just went out of business, I think.
Mm.
Yeah.
This is not the first time Berjaya is venturing into the satellite TV production, though. It is launched by the former Prime Minister, Tun Abdullah Ahmad Badawi, in 2015. MITV, they used to have 30 channels, compromising of entertainment, lifestyle, as well as international news. But then later on, it was rebranded to U Television. But the service never
Wait, so it went from me to you?
It went from MeTV to UTV, and now it's going to be ANSA Broadcast. But UTV never really, you know, got into service. It didn't really got much traction. But they're giving this a go again. Berjaya is going to try this one more time. The only question I ask is, though, why satellite TV?
Right.
Why?
Nobody.
We know that, you know, satellite TV is a technology that's been done for many years now.
Mm-hmm.
Astro is even looking to move away from satellite TV as well. So why go satellite TV? We should not look into this. We should just go into
the only thing that I could, the only suggestion that I could have is that if what are the ANSA are aware that Astro are moving away from satellite TV, those satellites will still be installed, which means, you know, they've already got that.
Astro, to be fair, Astros, they know this was going to come. Like, this is not a surprise to them. They're a smart bunch of people, and they've already done huge amount of investments outside of their traditional business itself. They've bought Rev Asia. They know of what to prepare themselves of the digital onslaught, right? Mm-hmm. But for them to see, like, oh, there is a competitor, hang on a minute, it's a competitor that is doing the same kind of technology that we're sort of trying to get away from, I think it's a good competition, but I just wish there was another future, like, in terms of, you know, just give digital TV, just bring digital TV in, just full on internet, all the TV channels in the world, rain or shine, it does not matter because it is not satellite TV.
I'll be honest, right? You know, the first time when I'd had Astro installed here at home,
And it rained.
And that thing came up on my screen. I'm like, hang on a minute. It rains like 90% in the UK. Yeah, yeah. And yet it never goes off air. So that always frustrated me.
It's gotten better over the years with, you know, better decoders, better satellites. Right. But it still runs. It relies on technology that was built in, you know, in 1980s, if I'm not mistaken, right? And every single time they try to improve, it's just improving the infrastructure or the hardware that you have. The back end of things is still very old. This goes down to a lot of technology things that we have, even your mobile banking apps as well. They run on very old services that have been masked or that have been themed, like, you know, you have your phones, you can put all your themes, and you're an iPhone user, you don't understand what I'm talking about anyway.
I still get themes just on mine.
So for Android users, it's like slapping on a theme to make it look pretty and to make it look fast, but the back end of things is still very old. That needs to change.
That sounds like Android all over, though. You know,
no,
the front end is nice and pretty. The back end, I'm just joking. Carry on.
But yeah, I am hoping to see this to see what kind of channels they would bring in. Astro has a huge dominance in the sporting area. So you know, we know the amount of money that they invested in English football. That is huge.
Their sports package.
That is a huge deal for them. So if Ansar Broadcast can somehow break this dominance, it will have to be in that. I feel personally, for me, it has to be in that sporting area. What can they do? Because that is where you get your money. The Chinese stations or channels that you would get in Astro, most of you would probably, you know, be smart enough or be tech savvy enough to go online and get whatever episodes that are showing on these channels on your own. And we've got Netflix, we've got iFlix, we've got so many of these video streaming providers that are coming in and providing the same kind of content that you would get on TV. Astro realizes this. That's why they've got, you know, Astro on the Go, they've got, you know, and I stream Astro on the Go all the time to watch football. So if Ansar Broadcast can attract me in that sense where it's easier or cheaper, that's a win-win situation. And it all comes down to the price, to be honest with you, right? At the end of the day, we're Malaysians. It's all about how much does it cost.
What bothers me is if they come in and they go, oh, it's all going to be local content, you know, in the same way that iFlix did that and tried to push that.
Yeah, but then now you look at iFlix. It's local content and international content.
Right.
I'm rerunning, rewatching Big Bang Theory on iFlix, and I'm enjoying it. I'm really enjoying it.
Right, we had to take a very short break. Some music coming up from Black Rebel Motorcycle Club with Whatever Happened to Rock and Roll. When we come back, how Apple are denouncing neo-Nazis amongst Spotify and others in the wake of the white power attacks. Right, we are taking a short break. BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9. I'm Rich Bradbury, joined in the studio by
Jeff Sandhu
and
Arvind Yuvaraj.
So we've had stories so far about another Bitcoin fork, putting it into a Bitcoin trident, I suppose now. And then we had a little story about how potentially Astro will have a competitor. Now moving on to something, I know it's Fun Friday, but we've got something a little bit serious.
This is very serious, yes.
And I'm going to talk about it from the Apple standpoint. So
okay.
Apple, LinkedIn, Spotify, and Twitter have joined a growing chorus of technology companies to hit out at the far right and Donald Trump's attempt to put white supremacists and left-wing counter-demonstrators at Saturday's Charlottesville protest on the same moral plane, right? So this follows the lead of Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, Google, GoDaddy, and others, and the Apple CEO Tim Cook has pledged $1 million in donations to the Southern Poverty Law Center, the SPLC, and the Anti-Defamation League, and he even sent a strongly worded memo to his staff quoting Martin Luther King about the violence that happened in Charlottesville on Saturday. And this is a quote: We must not witness or permit such hate and bigotry in our country, and we must be unequivocal about it. This is not about the left or the right, conservative or liberal. It is about human decency and morality. Mm-hmm. I disagree with the president and others who believe that there is a moral equivalence between white supremacists and Nazis and those who oppose them by standing up for human rights. Equating the two runs counter to our ideals as Americans.
Ooh, powerful.
Very powerful.
Yeah,
right?
You know, the GoDaddy thing, that's really interesting. Before we talk about, you know, the other streaming companies that are doing this, the GoDaddy thing, the reason why they jumped on this is because there are a lot of American neo-Nazis websites or platforms that is hosted on GoDaddy because, you know,
it's cheap.
They are the largest in the U.S. and, you know, they're cheap, right? You could get a site for like 99 U.S. cents for a year. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these sites have been running on GoDaddy's platform, and GoDaddy decided to, like, we're gonna shut them down. And what they've done is they've actually now run on over to the dark web, and especially Daily Stormer, which is one of the biggest American neo-Nazi website. They've moved from GoDaddy, they've gone on to the dark web.
They originally moved to a Russian host, and the Russian host then turned around and said, we don't want you either.
Yeah,
which I think sends a very powerful message, right? Mm-hmm.
If they could do it, why couldn't the most powerful man in the world say it, right?
So, right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the big argument, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's been a lot of backlash from people who are in support of these people who were, you know, let's call them what they are, you know, these neo-Nazis.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it's you're limiting my freedom of speech and one thing or another. The thing is, it's a free market out there, and what a free market means is that those companies can choose if they want or not to promote your product. Mm. That's what a free market is.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that they have to, you know, host it. Mm-hmm. They can choose not to.
Mm-hmm. What I like about Apple is they also pledge to match 2-for-1 employee donations to human rights groups until the 30th of September, and said it would roll out donation systems for SPLC through its iTunes store.
Yeah. Yeah. We're also seeing, you know, like we mentioned before, Spotify, they're removing so-called white power music.
Yes.
They've been labeled as racist hate bands. A Spotify spokesperson said illegal content or material that favors hatred or incites violence against race, religion, sexuality, or the like is not tolerated by us. Spotify takes immediate action to remove any such material as soon as it has been brought to our attention.
Twitter as well, right? Yeah. They've removed accounts of affiliated neo-Nazi site, like I mentioned, Daily Stormer. They've lost their domain registration earlier this week as well. So it's great to see tech companies taking this action because
the president isn't.
So the president isn't, but even if the president came out and slammed these groups, you still have to rely on the technology providers because it is our daily lives.
Yeah.
We wake up in the morning, bang, Facebook, bang, Twitter, Instagram. We do that, right? And if these companies don't take this action, forget about the president. No matter what he says, that's a politics thing, right? Let's think about, you know, the human side of things. These guys are obviously making, you know, progress in getting people and getting the communities to be larger than what previously it was. And the reason why they're able to do this is because they're able to spread their messages using platforms like Spotify, Reddit, GitHub, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all these kind of platforms. Right? Even LinkedIn. They're even using LinkedIn to promote their ideology behind this. And it's comes down to, honestly, it really just comes down to these guys, and they are doing the right job here. Mm-hmm. And they're going hard on these fellas. And I just got to say, I love it. Coming from tech fan, and I've been doing tech shows for 7-8 years now, I'm really happy to see how quickly these guys have responded, and, you know, sites like GoDaddy to just immediately shut them down. And, you know, you go onto the dark web where, you know, you have your own small little playground to play with, and don't mess with us, you know, the rest of us. And just
the beautiful thing about them going on the dark web is that they probably don't have enough brain power between them to figure out how to get to the website.
That is the beauty of it, right? Yeah, because even like you mentioned, even some Russians are deciding, like, you don't belong here.
Yeah. Go away. We don't want you.
We do bitcoins and cryptocurrencies and stuff. We make money, not kill people, kind of thing, right?
And it's nice to see that they're taking a stand also. It's not like, you know, let's leave it to the customer. You know, they're paying. We want to be on the fence, kind of thing. So they're taking like sides, and then they're like, this is not right, so we don't host these things.
Yeah.
Does it say anything about YouTube? Has YouTube
jumped actually, on it also? Yeah. It does, yeah. Hang on, let me just quickly flick through my paper.
Because they're huge and they have a lot of...
Google's YouTube has also started terminating accounts, particularly linked to the white supremacists, including that Christopher Cantwell. If you've seen the Vice documentary, this is the guy who, when he starts bragging on the actual documentary about how many pistols and guns he brought along to a supposedly peaceful rally, I think he pulls out six or seven weapons he pulls out. A pistol. He's got an AR-15 rifle. He's got like a Kalashnikov. And he's just pulling them out and putting them on the bed and bragging about it. Right?
Wow.
This guy.
Wow.
And then the day afterwards, he complains because an arrest warrant has been placed on him.
Oh, I wonder why.
I wonder why. Right? Huh. If I could swear on radio, I really would. These are the kind of people that, you know...
It's called pirate radio, Rich.
That's right, yeah.
We'll do that after
one day,
midnight.
One day. Anyway, with that out of the way, let's have a bit of fun with some music. Let's have the Young Rascals with Groovin'. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9.
Breaking financial matters. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury, joined by
Jeff Sandhu,
Arvind Yuvraj.
Just to quickly recap, we've had some stories about another Bitcoin fork, a potential competitor to Astro, and how some of the bigger tech companies have started banning white power songs and white power accounts and whatever. And Christine has just informed me that even OKCupid have just tweeted that one of the guys, Christopher Cantwell, who is a web commenter and clearly a white nationalist, and you know, he's a Nazi.
He apparently has an OKCupid account.
Or did.
Until now.
They've banned him for life. Well done, OKCupid.
Yeah, so now he can go join OKStupid or something.
Whoa! Arvind, that is clearly your pun of the week.
All yes.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Right, okay, let's move on to something fun. I actually say fun.
Normally,
these things don't go together in the same sentence.
Normally, it doesn't. But whenever there's when there's money involved, it can be fun. Now, let me just, before I get into
this. Go on.
We talk a lot about, you know, on our show Game Time. It happens once every month on Tech Thursday. We talk about, you know, Dota events, Dota tournaments, Counter-Strike tournaments, FIFA tournaments, and it's fun. It's like, wow, these are the kind of tournaments we would join in, and of course, 15, 16-year-old kids would also want to be a part of this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But there's actually a staggering amount of kids in LA at this point of time who are competing in a tournament that I completely do not understand why, because I don't even... I can't
just spit it out, will you?
They're going in a Microsoft Office Specialist Championship. It's called the MOS World Championship.
Okay, so...
World.
I love the way that when you put it in the document, you said Excel at Excel.
Yes, because these are the people who are excelling and using, you know, like... it's just... I can't use Excel at all.
At all?
At all. I can build things or create things that people would use Excel. I would use Adobe Illustrator, and then I will mash it with Microsoft Word, and then I'll mash it with a bit of PowerPoint. I would do like 4 or 5 different programs just to get to what you would do on Excel.
Use the calculator
as well, and like a lot of things. I can't use Excel. I just can't. Brain Excel.
Is that just because you didn't learn how to use it in college or school or whatever? You
know? No. I did learned it. It just went in left ear, came out right ear kind of thing, right?
Okay, like, fair enough.
PowerPoint and Word stuck.
Yeah.
Excel just went on the exit highway.
It's the maths, isn't it?
It's not really that too. Like, I am really good at math. Just I couldn't understand formulas, and Excel was just really complicated. So they've decided, and this is the 16th year running the MOS World Championship. So how it happens is that they invite students from all around the world to be a part of this competition, which is actually hosted by Centripod program. This is basically Centripod's way of promoting certifications for programs like Excel, Microsoft Office, and PowerPoint and Word, right? We know that if you have a certification on a program like Microsoft Excel, it does go down really well in your CV. Yeah. Because you could do, you know, you could do really cool things with Excel. Yes, I said it. You can do really cool things. It's just that I don't want to do cool things using Excel, right? I got better things to do than working on Excel. However, these kids who are in their, you know, they are, I think in like they are 8 years old to 16 years old, but the competition is open up to 22 years old. This year alone, 560,000 kids around the world have taken part in this MOS test.
What?
320,000 of them were in the US, and only 124 of them made it to Orlando, which is where they're having the competition, after beating the rest of the kids in their own states. So Certipot Program is the company that's running this competition. What they do is that every single team or kid, as soon as the school, you know, buys this program and teaches you in school, you're automatically part of this program. When you show a certain type of skill or ability using Excel or Microsoft PowerPoint or Word document, the school will sort of pick you and say, hey, Rich, you know, you seem to be really good in Excel. You're going to take part and represent the school in the competition. And then you have a school competition of, you know, using Excel and Word and PowerPoint. Sounds really fun to do a competition. Using
this, right? I like how you said that.
I just realized how fun it sounds. I smell sarcasm.
I
just realized how fun it sounds, right? So once they go through these inter-school competitions, then they go interstate, and then they go to the world championships. And this is all the way around the world.
How do you judge how good you are in Excel?
We even have a Malaysian team, because I was just on the Verge website, and there was one of them who just went on these 3 days in this Microsoft World Championships, and there's a photo that one of the Verge editor took, and it's a guy wearing a Malaysian t-shirt representing Malaysia. I'm like, bro, where have you been? Send me an email. It's Jeff at bfm.my. Send me an email. I want to talk to you, because what do you do is exactly what I want to know.
Right.
How is the competition held here? It's very vague details on the blog side of The Verge. Basically, how it goes is for the Excel tournament. And also, by the way, they're very specific into Excel 2016 or in different versions, right? So you can only be a part of just one. You can either be...
So they have categories.
Yes. Oh. So you either only do Word 2017 or PowerPoint 2015 or Excel 2016. Like, that sounded cool, though. If like, hey, that sounded cool. So anyway, so what happens is that they give you a data set. This is according to the blog.
Arvin, I think we've lost Jeff for a minute. You know? let's just roll with him. Let's see where he goes.
They give you a data set, a complete data set, full with the formulas and every cool things that Excel could do. One of those A plus B equals to Z. I don't know how they do it. But, you know, one of those Excel kind of formulas that give you. And what the students are required is to replicate that or to duplicate it as close as you can to the final output. I have no idea how complex the final data set is. I'm sure it's pretty complex, because what I've seen so far from Excel, from, you know, BFM sales team that we sent out around, it's fairly, I would say, the intermediate level. I'm guessing this is like, you know, one of those really pro, you require like a space rocket engineering background degree to do Excel.
They're throwing away prize money of like $10,000 and stuff.
Not bad, right?
For a 17-year-old kid who works in a Chick-fil-A.
They also throw in Xboxes as well.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, they throw in a few Xboxes around, you know, for those really lucky ones, I guess. But yeah, so go ahead and check it out. It's a Microsoft Office Specialist World Championship. Just Google it, and it's a fascinating story. There's a blog on The Verge that is really long, but because it's 3 days, and he goes and talks to every single student, and they come from all around the world. It's just fascinating. The guy from Malaysia, though, in The Verge photo, bro, if you're listening, bro, I want you, man. Come on. Like, Jeff at bfm.my.
There you go. if you haven't got an email, well, I'm sure you've got an email, of course, but if you want to get via WhatsApp, 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to take a very short break, and when we come back, Arvin will be telling us about a Michelin-starred restaurant in Japan who have released their own cup noodles.
He's going to cook too.
Ooh, yep. He said he was going to cook, right?
In the studio, yeah.
In the studio, right. Short break, some music coming up. It is Sid Arthur, Hometown Blues, here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bankers, financiers, and moneymakers. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury, joined by
Arvind Yuvaraj,
Jeff Sandhu.
It's almost time for us to wrap up, but before we do that, Arvind Yuvaraj, DJ Shred, it is your time to shine.
Chef Shred
today, indeed, yes, well done. Oh my word,
they're just cutting
today, right?
See, can you see like the noodles bubbling here?
Yeah,
like,
I can see
nice,
something bubbling,
you know,
dude. You know. Get on with the story.
So, this is about Michelin star instant noodles. Last November in Nakiryu in Tokyo, I hope I'm saying that right, they became the second ramen restaurant in the world to receive like a Michelin star. They are known for their Tantan Men, which is a ramen variation and which has like dan noodles, which is a spicy like Sichuan noodle dish.
Yes.
Yeah, so they had all this. They became like super popular, and then there was like a long line in front of their restaurant. Some people won't even get place to sit.
They clearly do not know what banana leaf is, because real food to
not
me.
Not yet. The moment it shows up there, you know, then that'll win the Michelin star. but you know, so a lot of people couldn't get in. They started lining up around the block and stuff. So what these guys did is they figured out a way to make like instant noodles, like the Maggi hot cup that we get.
Yeah.
They put their noodles into the hot cup and they started selling it. So you can get these Michelin award-winning noodles in a hot cup, like an instant noodle thing.
Hey, that is clever.
Yeah, so they started selling it out to people so that people don't have to line up anymore. They don't have to wait to get into their restaurants and stuff. People were a bit skeptical. They thought, like, you know, you can't pack
the taste would
be weird and all. But they say it's okay. Like, few people, like reporters, journalists and stuff, they've gone to review it. I think someone from Says also went there. I'm not sure
if it's legit.
It's legit. They say it's almost the same. It tastes almost identical to the one in the restaurant.
But there is one problem with this, right? At these particular Michelin star noodles. Is that they're not available here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Of course. We're telling people how delicious they are.
Yeah.
Sorry, folks, but you can't have them.
You can.
Arvind?
Technically, you can. You can actually buy them from HobbyLink Japan. It's at hlj.com, but one cup costs you about $15.
HobbyLink Japan.
Yeah.
HobbyLink Japan is a site that sells die-cast vehicles and like model cars.
And statues and toys and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're selling these noodles. You can buy it from there. It's hlj.com. It's about 360 yen, which is about 14 ringgit and 10 cents today.
We need a guinea pig to test this.
Christine is raising her
hand. They say the soup, the broth, is the one that kills it, that makes it special. So if you can get that thickness, you know, that thing, then it works. And they say the one in instant cup works.
All right.
I don't know.
Before we have to take a very... Well, no, we don't have to take a very short break.
We have
to wrap up the show very shortly.
Yes.
Before we do that, let's recommend some podcasts for people to listen to over the weekend. Jeff, I know you've got some suggestions.
Too many shows that has happened over the week, really good stuff. I suggest you to just go on and download the BFM app on iOS App Store or Google Play. If you want two picks, I'll give you one of those. It's Monday's 10 o'clock Raise Your Game. We had Simon Sinek. He's the guy that became really popular on Facebook talking about Gen Y and millennials and how you got this problem.
And I love the voice you use right there.
So he came on the show, and obviously yesterday, I'm going to promote my own show. Yesterday at 11 o'clock, we had a chat with His name is Aznan Abdul Aziz. He is from the Bank Negara Malaysia. He's also the FinTech Enabler Group Chairman. And obviously, we're talking about enabling FinTech here in Malaysia.
Wonderful stuff. Just to quickly run down the stories that we had today, we started off with a new Bitcoin fork happening sometime in November. Now a Bitcoin Trident. Then Jeff spoke about Astro.
Answer Broadcast is going to come in and compete with Astro, hopefully, soon.
We then talked about how some of the biggest tech companies in, first of all, the US and now the world, are banning a whole bunch of content related to the alt-right and white supremacists, as they should. Do not tolerate racism in any form of any place at any time. Mm. We then moved on to...
Excel to Excel.
Then, of course...
Microsoft Office Championship, World Championship.
Wow.
Yeah, and then we finished off with Michelin-winning noodles that you can buy in a hot cup.
Wonderful, wonderful stuff. Right, of course, we still have more content coming up after the 1 o'clock news. What do we have?
Yeah, so S. Nalgunalingam, who is the project director of KL Spot City, MRCB, he was on the breakfast grill this morning. The 2017 SEA Games is coming to KL, and in conjunction with the start of the Games, we look into the venue that was developed for the event. KL Sport City is a revitalized project from the older Bukit Jalil complex that was constructed during the 98 Commonwealth Games. Project Director S. Nalgunalingam spoke about the initiatives taken to ensure sustainability of the sporting complex once the Games are over. Will this development become a viable one, or will history repeat itself? So that was the topic they spoke about. That's coming up after the news at 1 o'clock.
Sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
Right then, folks, it is time for all of us to say goodbye here on the show. On behalf of Jeff Sandu, Arvind Yuvaraj, and everybody else in the studio, I've been Richard Bradbury, and I still will be Richard Bradbury on Monday when you join
hopefully.
Us.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. I am getting old, but I still remember who I am. Of course, join
I
us.
I didn't see that.
Same time, same place on Monday on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.